Last week we looked at guilt, the debt that we owe other, or that we owe other people, and the fact that we have a secret we want to hide, and how we handle that, and how that guilt affects our hearts. Because remember, Jesus said that it's out of the heart that the mouth speaks, and that it's not what we put into our mouths that defiles the body, it is what comes out of the heart. And so we've been looking at, or we looked last week, at one of the things that damages our hearts. Now, I'm not talking about all of those things that we eat and put into our mouths that we know damages the physical heart. I'm talking about the spiritual heart, that which keeps us in line with God's will, causes us to want to honor Him. And one of those things is guilt, but there's another one I want us to consider this morning. It is a thing called anger. Anger. You ever been angry? If I see anybody shaking their head saying, no, I know you're not telling me the truth this morning, because every one of us at some time or other in our lives have been angry with somebody about something. If you're married, you probably have been angry at least once with that person sitting next to you. Anger is an interesting emotion. It's interesting in the way it's portrayed. You remember the cartoons that some of us used to watch growing up as kids? How did they always portray that cartoon character when that individual was angry? They suddenly turned red-faced. They got red. Red is always the color of anger. We think of the bull that's snorting and angry, and we say it's because it's seeing red. Red is that color. But it's interesting, when you go to the Old Testament, there are two words in Hebrew that have to do with the term anger. Now, I'm not making this up. This is true. But one of those words, if you were to translate it literally, it would say pregnant nostrils. I'm telling you the truth. What happens when we get angry? Our nostrils flare. Our nostrils flare because we're angry. Another word that is translated out of the Hebrew that normally means anger is a word that means to burn or to grow hot. Think of how we often describe an angry person. That person is hot-headed. Or that person is what we sometimes say, boiling mad. These are the ways we describe anger. And some of these may seem comical to us, but if you are the person that is angry with someone about something, it's not funny to you, because there's anger. And you want some type of resolution to that. And so our anger works on us, and that's what we want to look at this morning. As we think about it, if you are angry with another person, why? And as we think about our lesson this morning, there's some things I want us to first of all understand. I want us to look at different types of anger, and then the ways in which we express our anger, because we express it differently. You don't all express your anger in the same way. We want to consider what makes anger sinful, because what Jeffrey read for us just a moment ago, there is a type of anger that's not sinful. He says, be angry and sin not. So it's possible to be angry without sinning. But then what makes anger sinful, and then how do we address that anger in a way that keeps it from being sinful? First of all, let's consider the idea of the types of anger that we sometimes see in people. I dare say that all of us have seen the powder keg. You know that individual that just blows up, goes off, and you just don't want to be in their way when they release their anger. There's an excellent example of that. Some of you that are old enough to remember, 1978, the Gator Bowl. Two teams were playing in the Gator Bowl. One was Ohio State, the other was Clemson. The coach of Ohio State was a man by the name of Woody Hayes. In the last 2 minutes of that game, his team was down by 2 points. They were moving down the field. They were in position for a field goal. His quarterback, a freshman quarterback, backs up to throw a pass. It's intercepted by an opposing player. As that opposing player is running along the sidelines for Ohio State, he's pushed out of bounds, and Coach Woody Hayes punches him. In his anger, he punched an opposing player, because he was fixing to cost them the game. Folks, that is powder keg. Needless to say, he lost his job the next day, and according to what I read in preparation for this, he never apologized to that player for hitting him. That's the powder keg. They go off. They hurt people. They hurt whatever's in front of them. There's another type of anger. We call it the crock pot. You know, it sets. It's that individual that just simmers and stews about something. You're angry, but boy, it's just simmering underneath the surface. You're stewing over it. You don't blow up all the time like maybe the powder keg, but if anybody is around you long enough, they can tell that there's something that you're angry about. And then there is just what we call frustration. It's like the mother who is frustrated with her toddler that has turned over his glass of milk for the fifth time. And she just doesn't know what to do. She's so frustrated with the situation. Or better yet, for some of you, because a lot of you play golf, it's that golfer that is upset with his poor performance or her poor performance. I heard a story one time about a golfer that somebody saw he was doing poorly on the course. Finally, he got so mad that he just threw his bags, clubs and all, into the lake. Hopped in his golf cart and drove off. A few minutes later, he came back, and somebody that was watching all this says, well, he's come back to get his clubs. He's sorry because he got angry. He walked into the lake, picked up his bag, pulled his keys to his car out of the bag, threw it back in the lake, and walked back. A pro golfer once said that not everyone should play golf. Some, he said, ought never to play golf because it does them more harm than good. I hope you're not one of those. The last type of anger is what we call ideological anger. It is an anger that begins to label people. That person is no longer a person. You call them a name. Maybe years ago, when somebody was angry at somebody, they might call them a communist or a male chauvinist pig. But we call people names. Jesus spoke about this type of anger when he addressed those people that would call their brother Raca or fool there in Matthew chapter 5, verse 22. So all of these are types of anger. How do we express it? Various ways. Some of our anger is expressed verbally. You know that individual that suddenly becomes sarcastic. They start just being cynical, cutting somebody down, as we sometimes say. They're angry with an individual. They may not be a person that would address that person physically, but boy, they know how to cut with their words, and so they use sarcasm. Some people don't even worry about sarcasm. You've been on the job place, some of you, and a man or a woman that's gotten angry, suddenly the words that start coming out of their mouth are words that you wouldn't normally hear. They curse them. And boy, they can let it fly in a heartbeat. They can wear you out with their cursing because they're angry. Some people, you slander. They may not say it to your face, but they're so angry with you that they'll go around and slander your name, run down your good reputation because they're angry with you and they want to get even with you. And so they address their anger. Their anger is expressed in what they say about you to other people. But it's anger being expressed. Some of our anger is expressed physically. We've all seen the person that gets angry and goes off and just punches somebody, gets physically violent with an individual or individuals because of their anger over something, a situation. The wife that picks up something in the kitchen and throws it across the kitchen. The husband that kicks something across the shop floor because he's angry at something that's happened. And sometimes that violence takes not just a physical form, it takes a psychological form. We think about ways to get even with people emotionally and mentally. We start attacking them in those ways. We express it so that we can do damage. And then there's a third way. And perhaps this is the way that most of us tend to express our anger and not even realize it. It's what's called passive-aggressive behavior. All that means is that instead of violently coming out or saying what we think that's on our mind, we kind of go at it through the back door. We'll do different things. For example, have you ever given your husband the silent treatment? You know, you're just not going to talk to him for a while because you're angry with him? That's passive-aggressive behavior. Or men, have you ever, in your anger, withheld affection from your wife? Or wives, vice versa? You withhold affection. That's your way of expressing your anger. Sometimes a parent may do that with a child. They withhold affection because that child has done something that has angered them. And so they withhold that affection from them. Sometimes we do it, we express our anger by refusal to participate in a certain activity. I'm not going to that. I'm sorry. I'm just not going to go with you. Or I'm not going to participate in that activity. A prime example of that is in Luke 15. You remember the story of the prodigal son? After the son returns home and dad throws the big feast for his son because he's returned, what happens? The older son comes back. He hears the partying that's going on. He asks the servant what's happened. When the servant explains to him the reason for the music and the dancing and the feasting, what does he refuse to do? He will not go in. He stays outside. That's passive-aggressive behavior. Or consider this. You ever shown up late somewhere just because you're going to show somebody? I'm not going to be there on time. Or, wives, you ever decided not to clean the house, just kind of get back at your husband because of something he's done? Or maybe, men, have you ever purposely drug your feet on a project at work because you were angry with upper-level management or somebody that had given you something to do? You took your time. And it's not just, sometimes our kids have done that. You tell them to go clean their room, and they go in their room and they sit around for hours on end, and you tell them, don't come out until the room's clean. Well, they're going to show you. They're going to take forever to clean that room. It's passive-aggressive behavior. So we have different ways of expressing our anger. Now, when does our anger become sinful? When is it that God says, your anger is now wrong, and you need to address that anger? First of all, as Jeffrey read for us just a moment ago, all anger is not sinful because Paul said, be angry and sin not. So there are times when our anger is appropriate. Anger at mistreatment, anger at things that have been done wrong and should have been done differently. But anger in and of itself is just an impulse. It is an anger, and in and of itself it's not sin. It is nature's response mechanism. It is nature's way of preparing our bodies for either what we call fight or flight. To either stand and fight or to flee the situation. And there are certain things that take place. For example, our pulse rate begins to increase when we get angry. Our blood sugar goes up. The anticoagulants within our blood decrease. And anger is a response to a threat. Either that threat is real or it's perceived. And it can be various things. We can be angry because of someone's disapproval about us. We might be angry because someone has betrayed us. We may be angry because we've been deprived of something that we felt we legitimately deserved. We might be angry because we've been exploited or manipulated. We're angry because we're frustrated with something. We're angry because of some violence that has occurred to us. We're angry because we've been humiliated by someone. Joel Manby, in a book that he has written called Love Works, tells about a time when, as the CEO of Saab Motorworks here in the U.S., his sales had dropped in one quarter 20%, and he was called by the president of Saab International to fly out to Sweden on an overnight flight from the U.S. on Easter Sunday to Sweden. And he was dressed down in that office in front of all of the other CEOs from the different companies or the different Saab networks throughout the world. And when he walked out of that office, he says, never again will I allow myself to be humiliated in that way in front of a group of men. Maybe you've been the object of being humiliated in front of somebody, your peers, and you've said, never again will somebody treat me that way. Anger is our response. It's not sinful to experience that flaring up in the presence of a threat. But here's our tendency, and here's where it begins to become sinful. You see, our tendency at times, we have the capacity to keep the pot boiling. Instead of letting it go, instead of dealing with it and moving on, sometimes we have the tendency to keep the pot boiling long after the threat is gone. We're still angry over something that happened, may have happened years ago. And that's when it begins to get into our hearts and fester and create damage within us. That's when it begins to hurt us spiritually. Sinful anger is irresponsible management of anger. And by that I mean what we have done is we keep the anger hot. We may say things like, and these are legitimate things that may have happened in your life. You took my reputation. You slandered me in public. You gossiped about me. We may say something like, you stole my family, or you took the best years of my life, or you robbed me of my teenage years, or you robbed me of my purity, or you owe me a raise that you never gave me, or you owe me affection. But when our anger turns to brooding and a resentful anger that festers and infects the spirit, it's then that it becomes something that damages our souls. It's then that we become individuals sometimes who are just angry all the time. It doesn't take anything to make us angry. And the sad thing is that we may take our anger out on innocent people who have nothing to do with our anger in the first place. Maybe you are one of those people this morning. You have anger that has been festering in you for who knows how long. And your lie will just fly off the handle at anyone, at any moment. And it doesn't take much just for them to get on your wrong side. If that's the case, then this is something you need to hear. This is what you need to deal with. But I want you to understand something else that makes this anger sinful. It is sinful because it denies the justice of God. And by that, what I'm saying is, what we do is we begin to focus totally upon me and how I have been wronged and what has happened to me. And we start thinking in our minds, I deserve more. You owe me a debt, and debts ought to be paid. You ought to stand up and do what's right for me. But the person may not do that, may not ever do that. And so we constantly dwell upon what we do not have. And in doing that, what we seek to do is we seek to take God's place on the throne of judgment. We want to sit in judgment upon another individual. We want to decide what ought to happen to that individual and how we're going to get revenge upon them and how we're going to bring justice into that situation. Paul had something to say about that. If you look at Romans chapter 12, there in verse 19, he had these words that he writes to us. Or actually, he wrote to the church at Rome, but it's for us too. He says, never take your own revenge, beloved, but leave room for the wrath of God. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord. But if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him drink. For in so doing, you will heap burning coals on his head. Do not be overcome with evil, but overcome evil with good. Let God deal with the justice. You worry about doing what's right. You see, our anger denies the justice of God, but our anger does something else. It refuses God's forgiveness. In Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, he gave us a difficult command. In Matthew chapter 5, verse 44, he said, I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. Love is a verb here. It's not an emotion. It is a verb that means, it's not a noun. It is a verb that means to do what's best for that person at the time. And that's not always easy. A theologian by the name of Karl Barth one time said that our enemy is anyone who attempts to return evil for evil. Well, that can be someone as intimate with us as our spouse, or someone as nearby to us as our employer, our boss. Someone that tempts us to return evil for evil. And the only way we can love our enemy is with God's forgiveness. His forgiveness is the source of our forgiveness. We learn to forgive based upon what He has done for us. Our anger becomes a terrible obstacle to our grace. Grace that God wants to give us, because what we do is, as we seek to cut off grace from another individual, we're actually cutting off God's grace to us. Remember that concept of debt? Anger sometimes is the mindset. Guilt had said, I owe you. Anger says, you owe me. You have wronged me. You have mistreated me. You have taken from me. You owe me something. And I'm going to get it back. And so there's this debt, and we're not willing to let go of our debt. But what did Jesus say in teaching us to pray? Forgive us our debts as we have also forgiven our debtors. Matthew 6, verse 22, or 12. Anger is such an obstacle to the grace of God that Jesus says it even inhibits or hinders our worship. Here's the way he put it in Matthew 5, verse 23. He says, therefore, if you're presenting your offering at the altar, and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your offering before the altar and go. First, be reconciled to your brother, And then he says, and then come and present your offering. We cannot worship while we're hating our neighbor. And maybe today there are some of you in this audience that have a relationship that needs to be dealt with. It needs to be mended. You need to work on that. Let me take you to one more passage before we conclude this morning. I want you to look at Matthew chapter 18. In Matthew chapter 18, Jesus deals with the concept of forgiveness. And in this passage, what he speaks to Peter and the rest of the disciples, first of all, Peter asked him, Lord, how many times shall I forgive my brother till seven times? Because remember, seven is the perfect number. Jesus says to him, not till seven times, but until 70 times seven. And then Jesus tells a parable that has to do with forgiveness. Here's what he says. Notice verse 23. He says, for this reason the kingdom of heaven may be compared to a king who wished to settle accounts with his slaves. When he had begun to settle them, one who owed him 10,000 talents was brought to him. But since he did not have the means to repay, his Lord commanded him to be sold along with his wife and children and all that he had in repayment be made. The slave fell to the ground and prostrated himself before him, saying, have patience with me and I will repay you everything. And the Lord felt compassion and released him and forgave him the debt. You see, one of the first things we've got to understand if we're going to deal with the issue of our anger is that there is a debt that we owe that is far greater than we can ever comprehend. This man that is the slave of this king owed 10,000 talents. It's a sum that was beyond his ability to repay. It is more than you will make in a lifetime. And this man had no means by which to repay it. Initially, the king said, his master said, sell him, sell his wife, sell his kids, sell his possessions, and let that be used to help repay the debt. It would never have paid it, but it would have made a start. He fell down before that man and said, please give me time. And I will repay. The king felt compassion, forgave him the debt. We have a debt that we owe. It is a debt we cannot pay. You will never be able to pay it as long as you live. It is your debt of sin. It doesn't matter how much good you do in your lifetime, it will never pay the debt you owe God. If anything, what Isaiah the prophet said is that all of our righteousness is as filthy garments before God. All of the good you may do presented before God is not worth anything. So what did God do on your behalf, on my behalf? He sent His Son to die to save us from sin. In His great love, as Paul says in Ephesians chapter 2, wherewith He loved us, He caused His Son to become sin on our behalf that we might become His righteousness. He paid our debt. He wiped the slate clean. He said, debt forgiven. We need to understand how great a debt we owed that's been paid for us. But secondly, we need to understand something else. I want to draw you back to this. After being forgiven by his king, that man, that slave went out, verse 28, and found one of his fellow slaves who owed him 100 denarii, and he seized him and began to choke him, saying, pay back what you owe. So his fellow slave fell to the ground and began to plead with him, saying, have patience with me, and I will repay you. But he was unwilling and went and threw him into prison until he should pay back what it was owed. So when his fellow slaves saw what had happened, they were deeply grieved and came and reported to their Lord all that had happened. You see, here is a man that goes out, his debt has been forgiven, tremendous debt. He sees somebody that owes him about 3 months' pay, what you would make in 3 months' time. And he says, pay me what you owe. I can't right now, but if you'll give me time, I'll pay you back. Not going to forgive you. Throw you into prison until you can pay your debt. You owe me. You're going to pay it. The friends of that man saw what had happened, reported it to the king. The king had him brought back in, and you know the rest of the story if you've read it. What we find is this. The king says to him, you wicked slave, I forgave you all that debt because you pleaded with me. Should you not also have had mercy on your fellow slave and in the same way that I had mercy on you? And his Lord, moved with anger, handed him over to the torturers until he should repay all that was owed him. My heavenly Father will also do the same to you if each of you does not forgive his brother from your heart. You see, that's why it's so damaging to our hearts, is when we have anger that we have not resolved, that we hold on to, that we carry, and it builds up and it becomes resentment and it festers in our hearts to the point that we're angry continually, then it damages us. And it's only when we forgive from the heart that we can move on. God forgave us a great debt, the smallness of ours in comparison to what has been given to us. The smallness of what anybody else may have done us is nothing compared to what we have done to God. I'm asking you, forgive. What Jeffrey read for us just a moment ago, if you look at the last verse of Ephesians 4, Paul says, be kind, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake has also forgiven you. God forgave you, and what he says is you forgive others. Let it go. Walk away. Let me leave you with this last question. Will you allow somebody that has mistreated you, somebody that you may not even like, somebody that may not even be in your life anymore, and something that may have been done to you years ago, and possibly by somebody that might now even be dead, continue to control your life? It's not worth it. It's not worth letting somebody control my life. It's time to let it go. Get rid of it, bury it, put it in the past, move forward. Ask God. It doesn't happen overnight. It takes time. But ask God to help you forgive. This morning, if you've not forgiven somebody and you know you need to, maybe you are a person whose anger is festering in your heart and you need to let go of it and you need our prayers on your behalf. That's what we're here to do. But you may be a person this morning who knows, I am going to face the wrath of God because of my sin. And it's a terrible thing to fall in the hands of the living God. And if God's anger against your sin is something that you're going to face because you have not yet put on Christ, you've not yet accepted His gift to you because God gave His Son to take away your sin, why not do that today? Why not repent of that sin, confess His sweet name, and be buried with Him in baptism? Will you respond as together we stand and sing?